This is Dissecting Dragons, a speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers.
Hello and welcome to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers. I'm Madeleine Vaughan.
And I'm Jules Ironside. This week, 10,000, a celebration of Dissecting Dragons.
Now, before we start, I would like to make a point of saying that I wanted to call this episode, it's over 9,000, but Jules drew the line.
Yeah, Jules vetoed that because she didn't actually understand the meme to start with, and someone needed to explain it to her crusty old ass, so that's why that one didn't happen.
I can't believe we've got here.
No, in fact, we probably should explain where here is in case anyone has just joined us. By the way, if you're a new listener and this is the episode you picked to start with, this may be a bit confusing, but this is not our usual format. this is a celebratory episode because we've hit 10,000 downloads and it seemed an occasion that was worth marking.
It definitely did. But the weird thing is that I remember when we first started and we'd get to 100 and I'd be like, oh, we've hit 100 downloads! And it was so exciting! And we'd message each other like, oh, we hit 1,000 downloads! And it was just mind-boggling. We said, oh, you know, one day we're going to hit 10,000. And it felt like, yeah, that would happen one day. But that it wouldn't actually really happen, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it was bizarre. It was something, you know, it was a far-off thing to reach for one day, as you say. And I know that if you compare us to things like, well, you shouldn't compare us to things like Seth Rogen, because we talk in completely different niches. But in terms of sheer demographic and downloads, you know, we're small fry still. But we're still, this is big. This is kind of a huge thing. And yeah. What started to clue me in, because we kind of just sort of tottered along and I'd stopped monitoring the stats so much and we'd both been busy and had other things to do, and then our host provider just kept sending me sort of with increasingly hysterical toned emails with, have you considered advertising? I'm like, surely we don't have a big enough demographic for that. And actually we do have a big enough demographic, so really this is kind of a, hey guys, thank you for listening, and this is what we've been up to. We don't just talk about writing, we sort of get down and do it too, hopefully. when we can. And you can too. Yeah. If you are a writer, then obviously you can do this too.
Yeah. Hopefully. We're gonna spend this episode and we're gonna talk a little bit about actually what's happening behind the curtain.
Yeah, definitely.
And yeah, because as Jules so rightly said, if you're ever going to be indulgent, it might as well be in celebration for 10,000 episodes.
Exactly.
Downloaded. So I am just, I'm still kind of a bit in a daze. I almost can't believe that.
Yeah. I suppose the thing that's hitting me is the fact that our audience is so worldwide as well, as in I'd kind of expected a bunch of people in the UK and a few people in America. It's not. It's most of sort of North America. It's Canada. It's Australia. It's mm-hmm. you know, a tiny faction in India and South Africa and all across Europe, Germany, Sweden, Switzerland. And it's just a bit mind-boggling that, you know, we're getting together and trying to have conversations about how to write and how to improve your writing and reading things and how to be analytical about the sort of the speculative fiction you consume. And I wouldn't say we're always right about everything, but long shot, but you know, the whole point is that we question and we process, and it's mind-boggling to think that there are so many people out there, you know, in the thousands listening to us.
Yeah. And the funniest thing, of course, is that these were just the conversations that Jules and I were having anyway. We just decided one day to record them.
Well, it's not quite that simple. We were we were being a lot more structured about it. We obviously do, we don't write scripts, but we have a plan when we do a podcast so that it's not just a very, otherwise it would be a very random conversation. There'd be a lot more talking vegetables.
There would be. No, I obviously our episodes are structured and things like that, but in terms of, you know, the subject and stuff like that, it was just something that we were doing anyway. And I want to talk about our origin story, Jules. I want to talk about the Dissecting Dragons origin story.
We should start on the dark and stormy night when Madeline and I met for the first time. Clandestinely dressed in long cloaks that concealed our faces from each other in case we didn't like each other at all. And the coach and four in the background waiting to bear one of us away. That's exactly how it went down, guys.
That's
totally.
100% exactly how it went down, except it didn't go down like that at all. To give a little bit of context, Jules and I met because we were both with the same publisher. We'd both been, our books had been picked up by the same publisher. And this publisher was in America, where most of their authors also were. And this meant that we both felt quite isolated. And so I spoke to the publisher and I said, is there anyone out there? Is there anyone in the UK? And they went, well, yeah, J.A. Ironside is in the UK. So I looked up Jules, and this was before either of our books had come out.
Yeah.
They were both still pending. And the first message I ever sent you, Jules, was via Goodreads. And I sent you an email just to say, hi, do you want to team up a little bit so that we can support each other? Because we're some of the few who are actually in the UK.
Yeah, see, Madeline was a lot more ballsy than me because, I mean, okay, first of all, two writers who write in the same genre, both but for the same publisher, in the UK, that was kind of a lottery win right there for us.
Yeah.
But also, I think they'd said, oh, you know, you might, I think the publisher did get in touch with me and say, oh, you might consider teaming up with this person. And then there was somebody else who wrote romance, I think, as well.
Yeah,
who lived up north somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, well, I don't really have a lot to offer there. But I was still in denial about being a writer. You know? I think I'd literally just come out to my family about it. And they're like, yeah, we know what you've been doing up there since you were 12 in your room when you think you're being all secretive about it. We know you're writing. We know what you're up to. So yeah, it was great to hear from Madeline when she reached out initially, and not least because it's not that I don't make friends easily, it's more a case of I don't really like people that much, so you know, as a theory, as a concept, yeah, you're all fine. Oh god, I sound like a complete nutcase. but yeah, I don't think anybody really quite encapsulates how isolating and lonely it can be to write. And then you get over, you make a writing group or you have your writing friends, and then somehow you leap over the hurdle and actually get a publishing contract, and it kind of puts a few barriers in the way between you and other writing friends sometimes.
Yeah. It is a very difficult thing because actually one of the best resources you have as a writer is other writers and a community of writers. And you help each other out. And when I say help each other out, that doesn't necessarily mean you introduce them to your agent or you introduce them to your publisher unless you feel that that's appropriate. It can be a critique. It can be a word of encouragement. Now, obviously, you can't help out every single person who comes to your door. And unfortunately, when you do get a certain level of success, there are going to be, you do end up getting approached by more and more people. And you certainly can't read the manuscripts of every single one of them. It's a difficult, you know, balance to find. But you can suddenly find yourself being ostracized from this writing community that you've fostered, that you've been a part of, when you're all trying to break big together. And
yeah, the assumption is that once you've got a publishing deal, you've made it, and that's really not the case at all. And I'm sorry if that's something people don't want to hear, but you know, that's kind of to use a karate metaphor, you know, it's akin to the feeling when you get your black belt and you realise that actually that just means that they consider you competent enough to be an apprentice now. They don't think you're going to punch yourself in the face. So this is the level you're at. And I suppose it's kind of like that with your first book deal. Very few people hit it big straight out of the gate.
Mm-hmm.
And all the overnight bestsellers and successes that you see have usually been around 10 years in the making. So I realise that's bursting a few people's bubbles, but it's worth knowing this because I might have felt better about a lot of things if I'd known them before I got to the whole your book's published and everything that came after that, as it were.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But Madeline is quite right. You can find yourself sort of nudged a bit sideways, and it's not malicious. It is genuinely a case of, oh, well, you don't really need our help anymore. What can we offer you, et cetera, et cetera. And eventually everybody readjusts. But in that interim period, it's quite lonely.
Yeah, it is. And another thing that happens is jealousy as well. Now, that's something I don't really want to talk about particularly because it's not a very nice thing. And I think it's quite natural to be a little bit jealous or a little bit envious of someone who's had success in an area that you want to have success in. I think it's quite normal. But I think that there are two ways that you can handle it. You can be jealous and you can be envious and you can say, oh, I want that for myself. I want to be able to do that. But still be happy for someone else.
Yeah,
still be happy for their success and still feel that it's well deserved.
And it might even then galvanize you to work harder.
And I've been very fortunate in that, for the most part, that's the reaction of has been the reaction of my friends, who are also writers. And I've then watched as they go on to their own successes and things like that, and I've been equally happy for them because I do genuinely want all of them to succeed. And I am honest. When I like something, I will tell you that I like it. You will know I like it because I'll write fan fiction about it. But there have been cases where I have been witness to and been the subject of people who have just become unpleasant and they don't want to engage with me because they somehow think that I think I'm better than them.
Yeah.
And that's something that they've projected on themselves because they've seen published writers as better than they are. And that's not how it works. That's not really how it works at all.
No.
So, yeah.
You're absolutely right. And professional jealousy is a very particular beast that it can really knock you for six, I think. Yeah. And obviously, I'm not going to talk about it too much either, because there's no need. There's sort of things that are water under the bridge from one or two. I suppose the thing is, you can tell who your real friends are by how they react to you succeeding.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I said, a little bit of jealousy, that's fairly normal. But the way that they encourage you, and how they kind of take it, that's the mark of whether actually this is going to be a good thing in a relationship or it might actually be an issue. Regardless, the point is that it was quite lonely.
Yeah, a complete sidebar, and we will get back onto our origin story in a minute because it's fascinating, but a complete sidebar is that you still, you know, getting a publishing deal does not mean all your troubles are over, as we've said, and you are still going to struggle to write. That's a fun fact. You are still going to have days when it's difficult. You are still going to have days when the next book is kicking your ass, as my second book did for well over a year. And no book comes out the same way. So having a measure of success can make it quite difficult to say honestly to a writing group, hey, I'm having difficulty. And there's two reasons for this. One of them is the fact that you have a measure of success and therefore you feel the need to keep projecting success. You know, the whole fake it till you make it thing. A lot of big name YA authors now coming out and saying, No, actually, I was flailing. I was really struggling. My books weren't doing very well. I know I'm very successful now, but with that first book you thought was an overnight success that I got discovered by, actually, it didn't go very well. It was horrible. I had a great period of depression afterwards because I thought, oh my God, I've succeeded and yet still failed. And I was still faking success because that's what I thought you're supposed to do, when actually the better thing to do would have been to say, hey, this isn't going as well as I thought. You know, there's kind of an asp in this garland. And yet with perhaps with friends or, you know, writing buddies who are struggling to get to where you are, you feel then that you can't actually say, I'm struggling, I'm still struggling, even though I've got this far. Or you can say it and the answer you get is, yeah, but you've done all this and you've written X number of books and you've got this success, you earn this amount of money back from it. You're paying $1 a month with your writing money. What have you got to complain about? It is the general gist of the argument, and that's quite disheartening.
Yeah, it is. It is very. And it's a struggle. The whole publishing world is a struggle. It's got to be something that you really, really want, something that really matters to you, because it can take chunks out of you, and you can lose friends over it, but you can also gain some pretty amazing ones, as is the
Yes.
case right now.
Back to our origin story on that dark and stormy night when Madeline was
It was
writing an
not
email.
an Listen, it was stormy. Would you shut up about dark and stormy? No, I know. Actually, I think it might have been nighttime, so maybe you got that bit right. And I might have been wearing a cloak. Who knows? I do flounder around the house in a cloak occasionally, just because I can. So I sent this email, and I was incredibly intimidated by Jules when we first started speaking. No, I was. Yeah, I was intimidated by you. I was really intimidated by you because you seemed so impressive. And you were really impressive. One thing that really kind of connected Jules and I is that actually we found out that we had quite a lot in common, in terms of what we liked to read, but in terms of our general interests. So we're both martial artists. We are both super into folklore. We're both really, really into folk music as well, and mythology. And by the way, just an aside, people don't realize this. So obviously I'm a singer. I think most people know that. But Jules has got an amazing voice.
Oh,
She's got a
thank
really, really nice voice. You do. I the first it was like 2 years before I heard you sing for the first time, and I was like, oh, that's so nice. I
Well, I
love
suppose
your
the thing
voice.
was, I'd heard you sing and I thought, oh, she's got such a lovely voice. She won't want to hear me. I'll be like a crow, you know?
You're not. You've got an amazing voice. Anyway, so back to that dark and stormy night. Now you've got me doing it. Jules and I started emailing each other, and I was really intimidated by her, and I was kind of like trying to puff up my own chest, be like, yes, I'm on the same level as you, whilst feeling totally inadequate, in comparison. And I guess it wouldn't be wrong to say that I fell in love.
Yeah, I mean that's a great quote from a book called Codename Verity, and it's like finding your best friend is like falling in love, and it was like that.
It was amazing. And to get kind of really personal about things, it was not a great time in my life in general, because I was in my final year of university. I did have this book contract that was going through. I was going to be published. I had everything going for me in terms of that. And my mother was had terminal cancer, and she was dying, and I didn't talk about it with anyone. In fact, I don't think pretty much anyone at all knew. I had completely isolated myself from most of the people in my class. I didn't really have that many friends at the university anymore. There had been a number of other things which had gotten in the way of that. And it meant that I was incredibly on my own, and I was constantly trying to overachieve, really struggling in a lot of ways, because I wanted to constantly appear perfect. And then Jules and I started talking, and it was such, I hate to say this, but it was such a blessing. It made such a significant difference. It was like a light. And that's not to say that I didn't have some other amazing friends. I did. But in this one particular area, I had felt so alone and so lost and very disconnected. And then suddenly, not only had I found this lifeline, this lifeline was one of the most amazing people I'd ever met. So it was such a win.
Yeah. Okay. Looking at it, I'm going to take us back slightly. So imagine the scene is shifting slightly. So we're not looking through Madeline's POV anymore. We're looking through mine. My older, jaded, very cynical POV. Don't really expect people to impress me very much anymore because I've seen a lot. And I just remember meeting Madeline. I wouldn't say I was intimidated, but I was kind of like, oh wow, I really can't coast with this one. I have to actually draw on my intellect here. I have to try. And you know, all that charm you've been shelving for years because no one's really been worth it. Better draw on some of that too. I don't expect her to really like me right out of the gate, but I'm going to at least put in a little bit of an effort here. And you just seem so cosmopolitan. There's me there sort of thinking, well, you know, technically I speak four languages and a couple of others not too badly, and I read quite a few things, and but not quite insignificant, but definitely in the sense of I kind of need to put my best foot forward. So going back to what Madeline was saying about the whole, you know, finding your best friends like falling in love, and it is a case of we weren't dating or anything like that. And I know it's an ongoing joke of the podcast where we say us as a couple and then one of us sort of sneers at it, but it was kind of like that when you meet somebody and you think, oh god, there's going to be some real chemistry here, I don't want to screw this up right at the start. I don't think there are many friendships like that that come along where you just sort of think, I know I'm going to really like this person. I think there's been like two or three for me. And obviously I've lived a bit longer than you, so I can squeeze more in. But yeah, and again, I've obviously had other friends. I still got other friends. I didn't think, no, I've got Madeline. That's enough for me now. The rest of you are fuck off.
You sent letters to your other acquaintances.
Yeah, I did yawned all of them, all my attention to, yeah, this is getting creepy and a bit stalky, and we're back on the whole you living in my cellar thing. Sorry, I completely derailed that. But yeah, I would say having a writing buddy, and I have several, but having a writing buddy who turns out to actually be your ideal reader as well is invaluable. That's worth more than rubies, and I don't think you can fit into words just how important that is if you happen to get it. And I don't think everybody is, but I do feel incredibly fortunate that happened. And we're not going to go into details, but we're obviously not with that same publisher anymore for various reasons. But the one good thing I would say that came out of that was I would never have met Madeline if we hadn't been.
Yeah. Yeah. There are so many bad things throughout my life that I actually kind of, I'm at peace with simply because they led me to you, Jules, and I mean that. So yeah, it was very fortuitous. So anyway, so back to the story. So there we were exchanging emails via Goodreads, and then we kind of exchanged Facebook, and then I don't know at this point, sometimes these things get confused, but I did something that Jules has referred to as do you want to build a snowman moment, which is, Jules came up with this thing where very occasionally I would approach and say, hey, do you want to try doing this? Do you want to do this? And she said it was like in Frozen, where you've got Anna knocking on the door going, do you want to build a snowman?
Yeah, you've got the younger sister sort of like trying to get the older sister to join in something that vaguely fun and irresponsible that could end in disaster.
That's me. And I said, look, our books are coming out around the same time. Do you want to have a joint launch?
Yeah. Yeah, that was you. I think that was you. Yeah, that was your. Yeah. Do you want to build my? Do you want to build a slow my slow man? Do you want to build a slow man?
Do you want to build a slow man?
That's completely changed the context of that song. My one and only. Do you want to build a snowman? Moment came later in the origin story of Dissecting Dragons.
Yes, it's quite a significant. Do you want to build a snowman moment? So we'll come to that in a little bit. But I said, do you want to do this launch together? And Jules agreed. And so we set it up, and we did it in, it was Stroud. Stroud?
Yeah, it was Stroud Library.
It was Stroud Library. And as I was waiting outside of Stroud Library, I had my friend with me, Alex. And I suddenly went, oh my God, I've never actually met Jules face to face.
Oh God.
And every bit of uncertainty came through me again, because my instinct would have been to run over to her and give her a massive hug, because I felt like that's where we were at, right? We were hugging friends. We were like, you know, that was where it was for me. And then I suddenly thought, what if that's not where it is for her? What if she's one of these people who does not hug, and she thinks that I'm some weirdo? What if this is just like a professional thing for her? What if she's just indulging me? Oh God! And I guess I kind of got it way too much in my head. But when Jules did arrive, and I kind of went over to her very quickly, and then I stood there, and I just became very, very stiff, and then Jules became very, very.
We
kind of looked at each other.
Because I was thinking the same thing. I was like, oh no, she's a hugging friend now. You've never actually met her in real life. Ah, but she's a hugging friend. And then you were there and you stuck your hand out. I was like, oh no, she's a shaking the hand friend. You got that wrong. So we did. We did a very short business-like handshake instead.
We did. I was... But it was amazing because there were so many mixed signals, because as I went in to put the hand, I saw just a second of you saying, like, you were about to go in for a hug, and I thought, oh no, I was right. We are hugging friends, but it was too late.
Oh man, that was hilarious. And the entire thing was, the entire launch was, it was good fun, actually, I think.
It was a really good success, and I think that kind of really the starting point in us knowing that actually we would be good in terms of debates and discussions and things like that, because we were there, we were on this panel together, and we were both answering our own questions, but we were kind of playing off of each other as well.
Yeah.
And it was so natural. It just felt great. It was really, really good.
Yeah. So this sort of, obviously our books launched and there was everything that came along with that, and we both started working on other things. On Madeline's case, Madeline had already written two of the other books in her series, which, by yes. the way, when you're struggling with book two, is kind of like the last thing you want to hear, even though you're really happy for the other person. Like, fuck, yeah. I'm so far behind. Anyway. Part of a marketing and promotional type thing, we were both asked to be on various different podcasts, and they suggested trying to get people in at the same time. For Madeline and me, that meant staying up until 1 o'clock in the morning and finishing at 2 o'clock in the morning, so that we would be on a live radio type thing at an appropriate time for most of America. And we arranged to be on the same podcast, didn't we?
We did, yeah. Before we get to that, I suddenly realised there's just one little step we skipped in terms of our earlier origin. Before we did the launch, Jules and I did actually read each other's books.
Yes.
And that's where the trouble really started. It's where the trouble really started. Now, Jules originally gave The Sons of Thespian 4 stars, and I've never been so disappointed in my entire life. And it wasn't that I felt, oh, how could you do that to me? It's that, no, I really wanted to impress her, and I haven't impressed her enough. I was really angry with myself. But then I really liked your review, and it made me feel a lot better about things. And then I had a real moment of crisis because I picked up your book and I realized that it was about Wuthering Heights. And anyone who's ever listened to this podcast has probably at this point heard my opinion on Wuthering Heights, which is that I hate it with all my heart and soul. I really hate that book. And it's a beautifully written book. I think it's got some great, a lot of great stuff in it, but I hate it. Okay, I hate the characters. I want them all to die. In fact, frankly, I'm upset that they don't all die at the end anyway. So, I suddenly went, oh God, I really want to like this book, but it's about Wuthering Heights. And then I read it and I was like, oh, I do like this book. And actually, it doesn't matter that it's about Wuthering Heights because, weirdly enough, even though Julie likes Wuthering Heights, she has the same opinion about it as I do, which is that it's not really a romance novel.
Very much so. And I remember, I think I read The Sons of Thestian first and then realized at some point just after that that your mother had died and got in touch with you in a panic saying, "I don't think you should read my book. You haven't read my book yet, right?" To which Madeline replied with, "No, not yet. I was about to start. I think maybe you shouldn't because I've literally killed off the mother in pretty much a very similar way right at the beginning of the book." And I was really genuinely quite anxious about this.
And I did. I sobbed like a baby reading I Belong to the Earth. Like, you'd warned me about it, but you just had a couple of little bits which were unexpectedly. Like, the mother dying wasn't actually that much of an issue, but then there were small little details and small little things which hit me in very, very unexpected ways. And that did it for me. I couldn't cope. And I sobbed. And I think actually probably that was another reason that I really ended up enjoying the book. Not that it made me sob, but that I felt very, very close to the main character of Emmeline. So we both really, really enjoyed each other's books at that point, which is really nice because occasionally a writer and you'll really, really like them and you'll like, talking with them and things like that, but you don't get on with their books. And that's just because of, a personal kind of thing. It could be any number of reasons why you don't happen to get on with a book. But in this case, we both really did get on with each other's books, which is great.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, that's a very serendipitous type thing, isn't it? Like, we're both in the UK, we're both writing this the same sort of genre. We both end up having loads in common. We got on really, really well in face to face as well as online, and then we ended up really enjoying each other's work. So
I know. It was fate.
that's mad. I mean, yeah, what other explanation is there really at that point?
Anyway, so fast forward again. So yeah,
We
we're
did
both on this
this
podcast.
podcast. And I think, actually, did we both arrange to be on it, or was I know what happened? You'd been on one before,
I have,
with
yeah.
someone else, I think with Roanna Silver as well,
That's right, yeah.
another author. And I was on one, and then the other person who was supposed to be guest author on the podcast with me had rung up and cancelled. So the person who was running the podcast got in touch and said, "We're going to make the podcast just about you."
Yes, I remember this.
I would like people to bear in mind that back then I was very, very shy about talking about my writing still. I found it very difficult to talk about me as a writer still. I was kind of only just out of the closet with the whole thing. And yeah, I just felt incredibly awkward. And the idea of talking on a podcast or a radio show was terrifying. This was so outside my comfort zone, which I know is laughable now, considering we're like nearly 200 episodes along in Dissecting Dragons, but and I think
But
nothing of
no,
it. But
but
back
yeah,
then, that
it
was
was.
really bad.
I remember you messaged me. And you're like, "Oh my God, this has happened!" And I said, "Don't worry, you're allowed call-ins on this podcast." So I stayed up because I was going to listen to it anyway. Stayed up, and I thought, "Don't worry, don't worry, I'll help out." I'll call in to ask a question. Because I've read the book, but the person who was running the podcast hadn't actually read your book.
It wasn't,
which would have made it very difficult.
I don't think she'd even read the synopsis. I think you can still listen to this podcast if you're that interested. It was terrible, and it wasn't terrible because she hadn't read my book. It was terrible because the interviewer didn't have really a clue what she was doing, and it was really off-putting, and I was awkward. And then Madeline phoned in, and I think Matt put it best in the sense of he heard the podcast afterwards and said, "I love the fact that Madeline just rocked up and took over." He said, "Not leave the show entirely." It's like, it was a really good show after that. The first 10 minutes were really super awkward, but the next 40 minutes were brilliant.
Well, it was. I felt really sorry for the one who, because they were meant to be doing something entirely different.
Yeah.
And then at the last minute, they were suddenly put in this new position, and they'd had no prep time. They'd had no time to figure out exactly how to redo it. And then you were terrified as well. And so I just went, I'm calling in. And I was like, I've got to think of some questions. And actually, it wasn't hard because I really loved the book anyway. So I had all these things I wanted to talk to you about anyway. And I literally did only mean to call in for like a few minutes, but there was such relief in the podcast runner's voice.
Yeah,
she didn't say, "All right, thanks very much," and she just let me stay. It was great.
It was brilliant. And then I think you were on one a little bit later on. I think it was a Halloween one. And
yeah.
I happened to be up late reading, and I just got this message saying, "I'm all by myself. Help." And I'm like, okay, hold on. I just need to set up my microphone and my computer. And
yeah.
Ended up taking it all into the spare room so I didn't wake up Alan or anything. And coming and joining on this Halloween podcast.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. I bailed you out and then you bailed me out. And it was brilliant. It was just fantastic. We had so much fun. Oh God, I remember that episode now. I'd completely forgotten about that. That's wonderful.
Anyway, a few weeks after this, I was thinking, I bet Madeline and I could do a better podcast than that. And hence came my "Do you want to build a snowman" moment with Madeline. A few weeks after that, when I said, "How do you feel about running a podcast together?" And we sort of said, okay, let's think about it, let's do a bit of planning. And then we said, we'll go live in February, we'll do it February, and we just sort of went from there.
Yeah. It's amazing how it kind of started, because we both had a big buzz from doing that other podcast. We both really enjoyed it. And so, yeah, we said, okay, let's give it a go. And in my mind, I thought that it would definitely be something fun to do, maybe for a few months.
Yeah.
And then I thought, I don't know how long we'd be able to keep it up, but I think we certainly have stuff to talk about, which would be very enjoyable. So, you know, even if it is only for a few months, we can give it a go. We said, right, we planned, we did some research, and we said, right, let's do it once a fortnight. An episode a fortnight, that'd be easy, no problem.
Yeah. We did the first in fact, the first episode deserves a mention, because we were ready, we got set up, I think we ended up starting four times because we both just kept bursting into nervous laughter.
We did, and we had another real problem, which is obviously the first thing I say is, "Welcome to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers and writers by writers and readers." And I couldn't say it. I couldn't say speculative. I'd go speculative. And it was a tongue twister for me. I developed a very, very tiny lisp in that moment, and I just couldn't get it right at all. And it's taken me years, and now I can just rattle it off and it's not a problem. But if you listen to those first few episodes, you will hear that I am struggling.
Because we even talked about rewording it.
We
And you
did.
were like, no, but it describes it better. And I said, well, do you want me to do that bit? And you're like, no, I'm going to conquer this. I'm going to do it.
I'm going to do it. I really struggled with it, and so it did mean that for that first episode, we spent about 10, 20 minutes just laughing, trying to start and not being able to. And we were both so nervous. And then we got rolling.
Yeah, we really did. And we got to the end of that episode and we didn't even make it a week. We immediately went, let's do another one next week. It was going to be once a fortnight, and after that first episode, like, no, we've got to do this once a week.
We knew. We just got to the end, and we just. I did like the fact that we both, at the same time, we just went, "Yeah, this is not happening once a fortnight. This is happening every week. We've got to do it every week." We just enjoyed it so much, we started out so rigid. We were so focused. And we knew exactly what we're gonna say, and we did a lot of preparation time. Obviously, we still have a lot of preparation time, but because it was the first time we'd done it, we kind of went in almost over prepared,
Yeah.
very worried about it, very worried about what we could and couldn't say, about whether. I think one of the big things we said, we don't really want to talk about ourselves because who's going to be interested in listening to us about us.
Yeah, I think we did actually say that. We're like, no, we must go in with good information, and we were really careful not to swear
We were so careful
everything
not
as
to
well.
swear. We were so careful not to swear, which brings me to probably one of my favorite episodes, which was episode 37. Episode 37 is Breaking Out the F Jars, Our Favorite Swears in Speculative Fiction. And up until this point, we didn't swear at all on the show, really, at all. I think we might have said bloody once or twice, and it was a bit, ooh, probably shouldn't have said that. And then we said, all right, let's do an episode on swearing. And since that episode, everything's kind of gone downhill to the extent now that we don't even censor ourselves anymore.
No, we really don't. And I think another thing that's happened is we've become not blinkered, but we've become a lot more opinionated. So if we think something is a certain way, we'll say this is my or our opinion on something. That doesn't mean that we won't then a few episodes later say, you know what, I think I was being a bit harsh there, or I wasn't wording that strongly enough. I feel it even more now. Because it's okay for your opinion to adapt and change, and for you to say that obviously that you were wrong, or that perhaps you weren't as succinct as you wanted to be. I think the thing is, when you first put a mic in someone's face, people tend to assume that they have to get every single syllable absolutely right. And that very sort of pressure you put on yourself tends to make you go and say the things that you actually don't want to say. Whereas now we're so relaxed with it, we'll just, say what we want to, or what we're thinking at the time. And we tend to be a lot more articulate with it as well, I think.
I agree. And I also think it's actually been really helpful in terms of we don't really jump around what we want to say. Which is in the past, certain topics which are particularly important to the pair of us, we've tried to kind of be as objective as possible. And I think we still try to be objective, and we're willing to concede that these are our opinions. But I'm no longer second guessing myself saying a listener here is going to disagree with me, because I know that a listener is going to disagree with me, and I totally welcome it.
Yeah.
But that doesn't change the fact that this is our podcast, and I'm open for debate, and I'm open to kind of re-examine things. And any of our listeners will see that we have re-examined things and gone, actually, maybe I was wrong there. But it's okay for me to say this is how I feel about certain things. This is my opinion, and it's no longer a case of, oh God, who am I going to offend? Because we're not being offensive. We're just stating our thoughts. So,
Yeah, and we've always welcomed comment from other people if they've got a different position to put forward. We'll
definitely.
consider it as well. So yeah, we've really progressed, and I think looking back, it's amazing on the sort of journey we've come on, both as writers and as podcast hosts. I mean, certainly looking back as a writer, I look back on things I wrote just before, you know, before Dissecting Dragons, and think, my God, I think I write, well, no, not, I know I write a lot better than that now.
Yeah, the same. And I think it's only fair. I realise that we're getting on a bit in terms of the episode, but one thing I do kind of want to talk about, because it is part of our Dissecting Dragons journey, is what's happening now with our writing.
Yeah.
And I'll say that Dissecting Dragons has had a massive influence on my writing, and during the course of us doing Dissecting Dragons, quite a lot of things have changed and developed. And we've both done many different projects. It's been a significant, it's had a significant impact. And the thing which was only supposed to really go on for a few months has just ticked on over years. And yet it doesn't feel old. It doesn't feel like a task or a chore. It's something that we have to consider and think about, because it is a massive commitment that we've kind of put ourselves to. And seeing as I travel quite a significant amount, and Jules isn't exactly stationary either, we've had to do some pretty considerable juggling, and we've had problems with electronics, and we've had problems with guests who haven't been able to come on last minute. And yeah, it's not always been an easy ride. It's been quite bumpy at times, but I've loved every minute of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm right there with you. And I would like to think that comes out in how we talk when we're on the podcast, because even if we're discussing something contentious, I think you can pick up our enthusiasm for the topic and what we're discussing. This sounds like we're kind of jerking each other off here, but no, genuinely, I think that is probably what engages our audience, is the way that we ourselves engage with the topics in hand. And as you said, let's have a look at where we are in our own writing journey, because if nothing else, having a set hour a week where you sit down and you discuss writing techniques, or you discuss analysing pieces of speculative fiction with someone else, in a thorough and, you know, really quite, this isn't a case of, oh, I really enjoyed that film. Yeah, I really enjoyed that film. This is a case of, no, picking it apart, looking for,
picking it
for
apart,
the nits.
Yes.
Having just doing that once a week changes how you think. You know, you're training yourself to think in a specific way, and that will come out in your writing. And I think that's one big benefit that we've reaped from this.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, I completely agree, Jules. It is activating that creative and analytical part of your brain, where, I mean, at the end of these episodes, I tend to feel really pumped for writing again.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a coincidence that our episodes are often triggered by the things that we've been watching or writing about or thinking about, which are concerned with the current creative project, usually in some way or another. So I tend to end most episodes and just go, yes, right, time for me to do some writing, and I'm really into it.
Yeah, it's the same with me, and it's a case of I'll come off of recording an episode and I'll sit down and I'll just, 5,000 words will just pour out.
Yeah,
which is brilliant, because obviously you've engage that part of your brain, as you said. So,
at least that's what Jules says. That's the cause. I think personally, it's because Jules is a Lennon she, and
I'm
using
sucking it off
a witchcraft.
You.
I don't know.
It's like, talk to me, Madeline. Let me steal your creativity.
I don't feel like you're stealing my creativity. I feel like you're stealing maybe like my life force or something, and making me more creative. And to be honest, actually, like, that's a fair exchange.
Oh man, that went dark. But that, you know, that's why we met in cloaks in the first place. So
for the arrangement.
The arrangement.
You see, the thing is, if I like to think that if you're my Len and Chi, then I'm your Len and Chi, so we're just feeding off of each other, and therefore actually there's just maintaining an equilibrium.
That's an incredibly sweet thing to say in a really, really creepy way.
You're welcome!
Okay, so where are we now with our writing, and where are we hoping to go with it?
Well, I think with my writing, I am currently doing lots and lots of things. I'm supposed to be finishing the last Hamartia Cycle book, but unfortunately it's had to sort of be put on the bench a little bit. Just at the same time, and I've got quite a lot of other projects that I also need doing, including writing for a gaming studio. I've just finished the script for our latest game. Can't give too much information about that yet, but I'm looking forward to discussing it with you guys at a future date, but that's all very exciting. Obviously, as I said, doing the masters, I'm working on my children's book, which is now on its, I don't know, like 15th draft. It's taking so long. But I think the thing I'm most excited about going forward is the Kestrel saga, and in particular the common universe that Jules and I are going to be writing in.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I'm also, obviously, I'm working on the second historical novel in the series that I've been writing, The King's Knight. I've almost finished book two. I say almost, I'm like 10,000 words off the end. But actually, that's not that much. And then I've got the third book to write, which I've got in plan form. I have various other projects sort of on the back burner. So I've got one percolating away at the back of my head, which is a sort of fantasy adulthood meets childhood type thing with the portal universe going on, which I haven't really discussed at all because it's still just sort of working. I have my my bisexual and pansexual necromancers police procedural type alternate universe thing, which is sort of half written. I like there are some projects that I just like to have bits of, and I keep coming back to them, and I know that as I add things, then they're gaining more layers, and there's not a hurry to finish them, whereas I mean I can actually write quite fast.
Yeah, so you certainly can.
And I have got I've got the first eight books in the Melanie Beckett series existing in plan form. I've got rough ideas for sort of, because I think overall there's going to be like 14 books in that series. I'm really sorry, that sounds incredibly arrogant, saying I expect you to buy 14 books to find out what happens. No. But this is kind of it's urban fantasy. There'll be shorter books, so about 80,000 words rather than 120 plus. So it'll probably work out roughly the same size as the Unveiled saga, all in all. I've got the second set of Unveiled short stories that I'm curating.
Yes, you certainly do.
I need to finish Kelsey's Choice for that. And I have a planned form for about a 10-book series for both Amy and for Aunt Mary in sort of Cold War supernatural spy era. So I have lots of books to write. But I love the fact that about 30 of them are all set in this shared universe. It's really exciting.
It is. It's incredibly exciting. And I think that was also another big part of our journey, was that I introduced Jules to Kestrel. And it started out as a joke of, oh, what if Kestrel met M? And it was just, ho, 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 wouldn't that be funny? Maybe. And then we started to reference each other's work, which was easier for Jules because, obviously, in the Hamartia cycle, it's quite difficult to reference certain things. But I managed to get a few in there. But Jules just has Emmeline straight out reading the Sons of Thestian.
No, it's Children of Arimathea.
She's reading like the last book. That's especially funny because it's not been written yet. So, Emmeline, if you could just send that to me.
Oh, it was so cheeky. And when you read that bit, you messaged me and you were laughing and saying, "Oh, but it's not finished yet." And I'm like, "Well, M can basically time travel, so I guess if she really wanted a book."
But yeah, and then we decided it was. I remember exactly where I was. I was in France. I was talking to Jules on the phone, and it was this moment of actually, why the hell don't we set Kestrel in the same universe as Unveiled? And at first, it was going to be very, very soft, in a very kind of DC-ish kind of way, in that, yeah, technically they live in the same world, but. Oh, it's like the Defenders and the Avengers live in the same world, but they're not really interacting. And then it was, oh no, this is now they're gonna meet, they're gonna properly meet, and they're gonna meet more than once as well. They're gonna help each other out.
Yeah, and our characters from each other's books are going to pop up and do cameos in each other's series and things.
To the extent now that at some point, and I'm not going to say who, but one of my characters is going to be dating one of Chaucer's characters.
I can't wait for that to happen. Even knowing what happens, I can't wait for it. It's going to be brilliant.
Oh, I ship it so hard. It's very
Me too.
exciting.
So,
Yeah,
yeah,
it's brilliant.
I guess if you follow either of our series or whatever, or the podcast, in fact, you're not privy to all the information that we are, but we're sort of writing and sending each other bits and pieces back and forth all the time as well.
Yeah,
So it is happening.
but yeah, see, the problem is that we're such big supporters and such big fans of each other's work at this point that even though we should both be doing this one thing, I've written this historical novel, and I was like, well, it should be Unveiled, but oh God, I love the historical novel. And then with Jules, Jules is like, I really, really kind of want you to finish Hamartia Cycle, but I also want you to finish Kestrel. And then I'm like, hey, do you want to read my children's book? Yes. And then she reads it.
That's like, damn you,
And
Madeline.
we've been very fortunate in that we've loved all of each other's books so far, which has been great. We've gelled with all of them, so that's really nice.
Yeah, definitely. So, and it just feeds back to the whole idea of a writing buddy who is also your ideal reader is just perfect.
Exactly.
I always
It
used
was
to think it.
especially.
Sorry, carry on.
No, I thought it was especially funny because you're like, I wrote this historical novel, I don't think you're going to enjoy it. And I was just there like, hey, Jules, I wrote fan fiction. Jules,
Oh
you're
yeah.
already surprised.
I was well. I thought maybe it might be a bit sort of wordy historical. I worry that my historical fiction is a bit dry, but in hindsight, I don't think it is. I think it's just because I spend such a long time fact checking that I sort of stymie myself as to whether anyone will actually enjoy it, because I can turn into a bit of a nerd about facts. I'm sure anyone who listens to the podcast noticed that. But yeah, I mean, I always found it really odd that in On Writing by Stephen King, Stephen King talks about his wife Tabitha, and his wife Tabitha is his ideal reader. Everything he writes with the idea of her reading it because she loves his writing. And I always thought that was like, that's a lovely story, but come on, your wife is your ideal reader? I mean, what are the chances you marry the one woman in the world who will love everything you write? And then it. Obviously, if you look at our origin story as writing buddies and podcast hosts and everything else, it's just like, well, actually, that can happen. Maybe sometimes you just really gel with somebody. Anyway, to finish off, we're just going to mention a couple of our favourite episodes. Obviously, Madeline has mentioned the swearing episode already.
It's a great episode.
It was a great episode. We've done a lot of really in well I've enjoyed all the episodes regardless. I've really liked some of the ones we've done recently, like I really enjoyed our Game of Thrones sum up in Winter Is Here and our Marvel sum up in Endgame, because I felt like we'd followed the progression of the entire series of and films and everything along the way, and we kind of been discussing it, and it was kind of like the conclusion that we needed for our own personal discussions.
Yeah, absolutely. I have really enjoyed those because it's nice to have a focused episode like that, especially for something which has been with us for so many years.
Yeah, definitely. And I suppose I'm looking at other episodes that sort of are fairly recent. I haven't really delved back, but things pop up occasionally. I really liked our sec. Actually, yeah, it was our second episode. We were talking, and it was around Valentine's Day, and we did Tainted Love, didn't we? And we
That's
looked our
right.
original one of looking at romance tropes, and I think we were even a little scathing. And then later on, we've done a couple of other episodes periodically that have looked at romance tropes in a in perhaps a slightly kinder light, in a sort of, yeah, love triangles are bad, except when if you consider it in this context,
Yeah.
it can actually be also quite useful.
Yeah. I've especially enjoyed most of the episodes where we've had guest stars on, and we've had some brilliant people. James Nicol was
Yeah.
our first guest star, and he's come on a couple of times, and that's been absolutely fantastic. But we've also been, very privileged to have Hamish Steele come on, SC Parrish. And Matt Willis, Amelia Bull. I mean, it's just been fantastic. And that's just to name a few. But we've had some brilliant
Yeah,
people on,
Laura Luxo as well, and Kay
yeah.
Ankrum this year. In fact, I would love to get
Yes.
Laura back again because her second book's come out. Laura, if you're
Ooh.
listening and you would like to come back on Dissecting Dragons, drop
Yeah,
me a
and
line.
Kayla as well. If you're listening, we'd love to have you back. Basically, all of our guests. You guys want to come back? We'd love to catch up with you again. Those have been great. I think probably one of my favorite episodes that we did semi-recently. I say semi-recently. It wasn't actually recently at all. Was Remus Werewolf McWerewolf Lupin.
Is it
The
just that you
importance
like
of
the
character
title?
names.
Do you just like the title?
I love the title. I thought it was hilarious. But yeah, no, I did because I'm a big nerd when it comes to names. I just love the importance of names in fiction. So I really did enjoy that discussion. I obviously enjoy pretty much any discussion which involves fairies. But one of the episodes, and for the life of me, I cannot now remember what it was called. But it was one of our special episodes because it was actually recorded with us together. We recorded this together in Dorset, where we were talking about machines.
Let us make men.
Let Us Make Men, that was it. And I really liked that episode, mostly because actually I came into it feeling quite unsure, because I wasn't, because in my head it pertained a lot more to sci-fi, which I'm not very good at. But I really enjoyed recording it. And it might have just also been the setting, the fact that we were both in the same room, the fire was going, it was just really nice.
You had a glass
But I
of
really
mead.
enjoyed that episode. I had a bottle of mead.
Yeah, and I'll retreat to the country episode when we were recording in Horsham together as well.
Yeah, that was really,
That was good.
it was great fun.
Recently, too, that I've really liked are The Problem of Susan, which is about, the wayward children in speculative fiction, and also Making
Yeah.
Shit Happen, whereby I did an entire episode about structure and only told you at the end that's what it was about. Even I didn't realise, I'd sort of hidden it from myself.
You suddenly went, "Oh yeah,
This is
I
kind of about
realised what I'm
structure,
talking
sorry
about.
guys.
This is about structure." Jules has a thing about structure.
Oh God, yeah.
It's a thing which is envied. It's great fun because yeah, Jules wrote this some has written some very scathing reviews when books do not have what she feels is sufficient structure, which I can definitely agree with. And we have a common friend, Amelia, who said, "I've been struggling with structure. I'm going to go to Jules." I was like, "Yeah, You want to talk about structure with anyone, let it be Jules.
Yeah, you just need to bring out the tranquilizer darts so that you can stop me when you've had enough.
Whoa, easy there.
Some soothing
whale song.
Oh. I've always loved our sum up episodes that we do at New Year, where we look back on the best and worst of the year before.
Yes.
Everything from politics to the recent releases of films.
Yeah, it is great. I do like it. It's amazing. I've realised now that we've done it several times, but yeah, how we handle Christmas and New Year, because obviously we don't record on Christmas or around New Year, because we both tend to be quite busy. So we record in the run up to it. And we tend to kind of record them relatively close together, if not on the same day.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, it really actually puts me in the mood for Christmas.
Yeah, definitely. Particularly if we're sitting there talking about our favourite Christmas films and things like that.
Yeah. And then we hang up and we go about, and I'm like, oh, I feel all cheery. I feel all Christmassy. This is now part of the tradition. It's really nice.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. We were worried we weren't going to have enough material for this episode, because a lot of it is sort of a trip down memory lane. But we hope that there's been some useful stuff in there about, you know, finding writing buddies and, you know, the path to actually getting published as well. I know we've been less factual, perhaps, and it's been more about our own personal journeys. But I personally really like to hear about other writers' journeys, because it gives me tremendous hope. Yeah. And I love seeing other writers who are more successful than me, who are interacting with their friends on things like Twitter and everything. I mean, I know I'm not part of their circle and I would never dream of pushing in, but at the same time, it heartens me to see that there are people out there having fun and making their living from writing, because that will be me one day, and it will be Madeline as well. So...
yeah,
because we haven't quit. Ultimately, is what it comes down to.
I saw a thing recently on Tumblr, which was someone had made a point that all of the old writers, you know, like Tolkien and Lewis and co, they were all friends.
Yeah,
they all knew each other. They said, why aren't modern writers all friends with each other? And they get, you know, like why don't you see Stephen King hanging out at the pool with J.K. Rowling, and you know, examples like that, and I just thought, actually, maybe you're thinking too big in that sense, but actually, I've found that with publishers and stuff like that, with groups, you see writers who are friends, especially in terms of books. But the thing that I thought about first was that actually, I just can't believe how lucky I am to have a friendship like this with Jules, and to have such a good friendship that we're doing this massive project together, in terms of Dissecting Dragons and then in terms of writing. It's just incredibly moving. And before we close off, I just want to say thank you, Jules, because none of this would have been possible without you. You have done so much in terms of not just the recording, but in terms of the editing, the organizing, the posting, and just the episodes. You're the life and heart of Dissecting Dragons. And I am so privileged to be doing it with you, and I am so privileged to know you. And I'm genuinely getting choked up here, because... It's just been amazing.
You're making me slightly choked up, which is not an easy matter at all, let's be honest. I don't cry, I'm a cyborg. No, I want to say thank you as well. And yeah, I've done a lot of functional type things, but this show wouldn't exist without you either. And it wouldn't exist without, you know, your playfulness and the way that you approach things. I'm sometimes a bit too gravid and serious about how I go about things, and I turn them I can I don't think I have with Dissecting Dragons, but I can turn things into chores for myself. And one thing that Madeline has always done ever since we first met online is to teach me how to have fun with my writing, which may sound insane, because why would you do it if it's not fun, unless you were just sort of compelled to write words must go down on the page kind of thing. But to have fun with writing, to have fun with marketing, to feel that it's actually okay to talk about your writing, that you're, you know, it doesn't matter even if you are a big weirdo, what do you care? And this intensely private thing that I had sort of done in the closet for about 20 years, which sounds really dicey now I'm saying that, but I'm going to go with the metaphor, was something that other people would enjoy sharing with me, and that I could have a really amazing friend to share and not only share, but grow it in the sense of the shared universe that we're going to write together and the podcast and everything else. So I'm incredibly privileged as well. And so thank you. And basically what we're saying is, guys, you need to get yourself a writing buddy. I mean, I know what they say about Stephen King, but actually he's in a rock band with four other writers. So he definitely has writing friends.
He definitely does. And yeah, finally, thank you to all of you who are listening, who have downloaded these episodes, or even who have just listened online and have supported us, to all of you who've left us comments and have sent messages. One thing I particularly like is that we have a few listeners who we don't speak to that often, in particular Hamish Steele, who I mentioned earlier, who came on as a guest. Every now and again, he sends, it's usually every kind of few months, so it might be 6 months, and then he'll just send a little message saying, by the way, I'm still listening, I really enjoyed this particular episode, and these are my thoughts on it.
It's and always, it's incredibly gratifying. To get those. Yeah. It's
brilliant.
It's always really well thought out, and it's just lovely to hear from somebody that they're really enjoying it.
Yeah.
So obviously, mine and Madeline's next Do You Want to Build a Snowman thing will be joint creating our own folk band. So auditioning people for drums and I'm joking.
You know, you joke, but well, you're joking. I was building up to this, Jules. I was building up to us doing a duet, but now you've just outed it, so now we have to do it.
All right, well, that sounds like that's the next project then. So watch this space, guys.
Before we go, my Pride Dissecting Dragons recommendation of the week. And this one, this week, we've got a slightly weird one for you.
Yes.
That is the, it's a new period drama film called The Favourite.
Yes, it's set during the reign of Queen Anne, so sort of 1702, and it deals with Queen Anne's relationship with her First Lady of the Chamber, Lady Marlborough, who is played by Rachel Weisz, who is utterly amazing in the film. In fact, they all are, the three main actresses, Emma Stone, Rachel Weisz, and Olivia Colman. They're all absolutely brilliant. Yeah. And basically, you could say that Lady Marlborough kind of holds the reins of the country through Anne, because Queen Anne really just wants to be loved. She's the terribly damaged woman by this point. She's had 17 pregnancies, and not one of them has yielded a child that's lived very long. So she's failed her country. She's the last in that respect, or that was the opinion of the time. And she's kind of... She's very broken in certain ways, but still very, very human. And this was a lesbian relationship between her and Lady Marlborough, who I would have said actually really did love her, even though she was manipulating her and using her for power as well.
Yeah,
and then
absolutely.
Along comes Lady Marlborough's cousin, Abigail, and Start, who has been forced to earn her father out of debt in a brothel. He lost her in a game of cards, and, you know, she's fallen from lady to serving wench, but she's clever, and she schemes her way back up to the top. So no spoilers, but this is
no spoilers.
This is a fairly toxic lesbian threesome, or bisexual threesome at least.
Yeah,
no labels on it really, because you consider the time, and it's a probably part of history that a lot of historians don't really want to look at too closely.
Yeah, and it has some very funny moments as well, some great humor. So
Yes.
definitely worth watching. And a very interestingly done, very peculiar, very enjoyable. So highly recommended. And on that note, guys, we'll say thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you guys next week.
Yeah, thanks and goodbye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast. You can follow our podcast at podbean.com or from iTunes. For more information, visit our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/dissectingreaders or check out our author websites at jaironside.com and madelinevaughan.com. Please note that no dragons were harmed during the making of this podcast.